Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to yet another episode, episode 10 of the Necessary Roughness Podcast, presented by Last Word on Sports. As always, I'm your host, Nicholas Donatic. Once again, I hope all of you are having a wonderful weekend and hope you had a great week, and I'd like to thank you for spending a part of that with us. As we take an overview of this week's episode, once again, episode 10, I'm a little excited that we made it through 10 episodes, right? Who would have thought we'd make it this far? Let's see if we can get another 10. This week's episode, we're going to break down last week's games, as always, with Knicks Standout 7, but there's a little bit of a twist. In the interest of time, we're going to cut down Standout 7 to 5, and the final two are going to be replaced by our mid-season rewards and our mid-season recap. We're going to talk about the division leaders, potential playoff matchups, so on and so forth, and also go over who's leading the award races as of right now, as we are in Week 9. Just past the halfway point of the 2017 NFL regular season. That being said, let's get right into the actual Phenomenal 5 instead of the Standout 7. You gotta hit the alliteration, so Phenomenal 5 of the week. Number 1, the Denver Broncos, after disappointing few weeks offensively, have benched starting quarterback Trevor Siemian in favor of Brock Osweiler, who's coming off a disappointing few years. Now, Osweiler showed flashes in his first stint with Denver. They thought he was going to be the heir to the Peyton Manning throne. In fact, the year that Denver won the Super Bowl, Peyton got injured, which he was injured, but then they held him out when he appeared to be healthier. They held him out because Osweiler was younger, stronger, faster, and it seemed to be the better play. Nonetheless, if you don't remember, I'll tell you, he wound up playing awful in the first half of a game against the San Diego Chargers, getting benched for the 400-year-old Peyton Manning, who could barely get the ball to the receivers. Peyton led a comeback, and Brock never came back as a Bronco. That offseason, he would go to Houston, and Peyton would ride off into the sunset, leaving Denver quarterbackless, which is one of the reasons they picked up Paxton Lynch and Trevor Siemian. And here we find ourselves. Lynch is not in the competition. At least it appears he's not. Siemian won it. Played fairly decent. As I've said before, I'm a fan of Trevor Siemian. Do I think Trevor Siemian has the potential to be the best quarterback in the league? Not at all. Do I think he can be an Alex Smith-type quarterback? A game manager who can make some plays for you and not make mistakes? I think it's possible, but he's played poorly over the past few weeks, and now they're going to go to Brock. And this could go one of two ways. Brock could find it again. He could realize his potential, which is highly doubtful. Or he could go out there and play like the Brock we've all grown to know and love. The Brock that the Cleveland Browns didn't even want. And that would be the Brock that goes out there and misses some fairly easy throws, makes some good throws, and ends the game with probably a touchdown and a pick. And his team tries to lean on their defense. It's going to be tough this week as they walk into Philly to take on the Philadelphia Eagles, who have the best record in football. Not exactly the week you'd love to make a quarterback change, but Vance Joseph decided to make a move, and let's see if it works out. Number 2, Janoris Jenkins, coming off the best season of his career last season, has not been so great this year. That has nothing to do with what actually happened. He was suspended for a game by the New York Giants, which is the same thing that happened a few weeks ago with his fellow cornerback Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie. And this presents the question, has Ben McAdoo lost this locker room? Is he trying to play damage control? Is the defense tired of being out there on the field for 35, 40 minutes a game? Are they tired of their offense scoring under 20 every game? If you've watched the New York Giants last season and this season, obviously last season was much more successful. I think their defense played much better last season. They have not to say that they've been awful this year, but it's been apparent that in the first half, they can be stout and they can stick with any team. But then as they're out there on the field and as they begin to wonder when the offense is going to do their part of the job, they get tired, they get worn down, and then if the offense does start scoring, like we had in Tampa Bay, the defense is so tired it doesn't even matter, and they give it up at the end. That's what happened against Philly, that's what happened against Tampa Bay, and you could argue that's what happened to make the Seattle game a blowout. It ended a two-score game. Granted, one of those was the touchception, the highly infuriating, for me as a Giants fan, touchception. The refs ruled it a touchdown for Seattle, as they did with the Fail Mary a few years ago, the only other touchception I could think of. And that kind of, after that, the wheels kind of came off. So we need to keep our eye out and see if this locker room is still behind McAdoo, because I know the fan base certainly is not. Number three, Kelvin Benjamin, the number one receiver for the Carolina Panthers, was dealt to Buffalo this week, right before the trade deadline, and reunited with former Carolina defensive coordinator Sean McDermott. Now, obviously they didn't have too much interaction, McDermott on the defensive side of the ball, Benjamin on the offensive side, but they had enough to where the Buffalo Bills figured they needed to acquire him. Buffalo's receiving core has been weak, and I've said it for weeks. They traded Sammy Watkins in the offseason, I was going to say inexplicably, but considering that a few weeks ago he voiced his complaints in Los Angeles, even though Los Angeles is winning games, maybe he has a little bit of a diva streak to him. And when you're not winning games, it can get even worse. And apparently when you're winning games, it's not good enough for him. So perhaps that motivated the move. Perhaps they were just trying to cut losses on a guy that had been injured a lot. Anyway, as they add Kelvin Benjamin to this offense, coming off of their upset, quote-unquote, loss to the Jets are no slouch, even though they probably should be, and many of their fans want them to be. Nonetheless, the Jets beat the Buffalo Bills, who came in last week as the top defense in the league, this week as one of the top five defenses in the league, came in and beat them down at home. So, Buffalo makes this move. How does this change their offense going forward? Well, I believe they're centered around the run predominantly, but this gives Tyrod Taylor a big body receiver to throw to. And no matter who your quarterback is, they always want a guy that they can throw it up, and they have a 50-50 chance it could be a big play. And when Benjamin, it's usually higher than 50-50. Another big deal was Jay Ajayi getting sent from the Miami Dolphins to the first-place Philadelphia Eagles. This is the most exciting, most active NFL trade deadline ever, or at least that I could think of. If I'm wrong, feel free to correct me. Hit me up on Twitter, at Nick Donatic. But as far as I know, this is and was the best NFL trade deadline. This was Major League Baseball-like. You have big names trading places, going to teams that are trying to contend or teams that are contending and didn't think they would, like Buffalo. Anyway, Ajayi to Philly provides some versatility to that run game that wasn't there. Ajayi's a former Pro Bowler, and LeGarrette Blount is on the latter end of his career. He's still a bowling ball, but there's games where you could see it's just not working out there. Throw Ajayi in there, get a little two-headed monster, and this team is scary, especially with that passing game. Carson Wentz has been phenomenal. We've talked about him often, and we probably will for the remainder of this season, and barring injury, likely for the next 10 years. Our final piece of our Fantastic Five, Phenomenal Five, I don't know what I wound up calling it, our abbreviated Standout Seven, to be exact, is the sad injury to Deshaun Watson. Reports say that Deshaun Watson has been placed on IR. He has torn his ACL, and he will miss the remainder of this season. Watson had 19 touchdowns and 8 picks in his starts, and he was just so fun to watch. The Seattle Seahawks-Texans game from this past week was one of the best games of the year, if not the best game, going shot for shot with Russell Wilson. Richard Sherman, after the game, told Texans fans that Deshaun's going to be in that top five in the league very soon. Sadly, doesn't like he'll be able to get too far this year as he's going to miss the rest of the season. It's going to be tough for these Houston Texans to rebound. Let's take this chance to go into the NFL recap portion of it as we look at the standings and the potential playoff picture. As of right now, the AFC South has a tie at the top. Titans and Jaguars both 4-3. The Texans in second by one game at 3-4. It's going to be really hard for these Texans to overcome this. Granted, they've won this division with poor quarterback play before, but the Jaguars are clicking, which is something I haven't said in a very long time, since the days of David Garrard or Byron Leftwich. And they're poised for what will likely be a 7-9 win year. Could be 10, who knows? Maybe they get hot. And the Titans are just as good, probably an 8-10 win team. That means the Texans from here on out are going to have to go 7-2 with a backup quarterback if they want to guarantee a shot at this division. Granted, this division usually underperforms. The winner's usually 8-8 or 9-7. But you want to get to that 10-win plateau to guarantee yourself a shot at a playoff spot. 7-2 this way out with a backup quarterback going. They'll probably go with Tom Savage. Tom Savage has been decent. He doesn't have too high of an upside, but I'm assuming they're hoping that the downside isn't very high either. There are plenty of free agent quarterbacks out there they could take a look at. As of right now, I don't believe they've signed anyone notable. They're going to go with Savage. So I think I would have to say the Texans are probably going to miss the postseason this year, especially considering they've also lost J.J. Watt and Whitney Mercilus already for the remainder of the year. From the AFC South to the AFC North is a little bit easier of a breakdown. The Steelers have a two-game lead in this division, and the Steelers should be able to run away with this division. Second place is Baltimore at 4-4, then the Bengals at 3-4. and the Cleveland Browns at a perfect 0-8. Pittsburgh should win this one fairly easily, although Baltimore and Cincinnati do have an outside shot of contending for a wild card spot in this topsy-turvy AFC playoff race. In the AFC East, we have the defending Super Bowl champs in first by a full game over the second-place Buffalo Bills. The Bills have a half-game lead over the Dolphins, and the Jets are in last at 4-5. If I would have told you the Jets would win four games on the season, you would say, hey, that's a pretty decent year. They get a high draft pick, and they still won a couple of games. They have four wins, nine games into the season. They could ruin their own shot at tanking. This team could mess around and win seven, win eight. Nonetheless, the Jets aren't likely to play a role in this division, but the Buffalo Bills are. The Bills still have two games left against the Patriots, and they have a stout defense and a newly acquired star receiver. Do I think the Bills can take down the Patriots once or twice? To be blunt, no. I think the Patriots win this division, probably with around 12 wins. They started 6-2. I can see them ending the last eight games 6-2, go 12-4. Possibly 13-3. Who knows? Maybe even 14-2 if they get really, really hot. If the defense starts to step up. An underperforming defense really haunted them in the first half of the season, and they're still 6-2. The Bills, on the other hand, are probably the front runner for an AFC wildcard spot as of right now. They enter the halfway point at 5-3. Coming off this loss to the Jets on Thursday Night Football, they're going to have an extended break before their next game, probably come out well-rested, get Benjamin into the playbook, see what they can plan around him, see if they can improve their passing game. And the Dolphins are out. The Dolphins are out. The Dolphins are 4-3, and they've scored 92 points. That is just over 14 points a game. On the other hand, they're giving up 20 points a game, and they are still 4-3. That's a statistical anomaly if I've ever seen one. In the AFC West, we have a trio of mediocre teams and the Kansas City Chiefs with a 2.5-game lead. The Chiefs enter Week 9 at 6-2. In second place is the Denver Broncos at 3-4, coming off a quarterback switch. Oddly enough, the Broncos are 3-1 at home, same as the Chiefs, but the Chiefs are 3-1 on the road, and Denver's 0-3 on the road. Then, tied for third, we have the Chargers at 3-5 and the Raiders at 3-5. The Raiders have probably been the most disappointing team in the league this season, considering last year they were a Derek Carr away from being in the AFC Championship game, and this year, I don't know, they could always go on a run, they have the talent, but they've looked lost out there. They have not looked good offensively. The defense has been mediocre, which is what they needed to be, but the offense hasn't stepped up, with the game that sticks out the most being that awful loss to the Washington Redskins in primetime. As for the Chargers, they're the Chargers. They'll probably pick in the top 12, maybe the top 10. 3-5, postseason's really out of the picture. I don't think they want it to be in the picture, to be honest. And as we go big picture, as of right now, the Pittsburgh Steelers are the projected one seed, with the Chiefs in at number two, because the Steelers defeated the Chiefs at Arrowhead. The three seed is the New England Patriots, and the four is the Tennessee Titans. As of right now, the two wild card teams, who would have predicted this at the beginning of the year, the two wild card teams are the Buffalo Bills at 5-3, as I mentioned, and the Jacksonville Jaguars at 4-3. Still in the hunt, we have the Dolphins tied at 4-3, and then we have the Ravens at 4-4. After that, we have the Jets and Texans, and teams that could make a run, but likely won't. We wrapped up on the AFC West, so let's head to the NFC West, where currently there's a tie atop the division between the Seattle Seahawks and the Los Angeles Rams. The Seahawks hold the tiebreaker as of right now, as they won their first matchup 16-10. But just a reminder, they have another matchup, and then if the Rams win that one, it could go to a divisional record. The Seahawks have been less than impressive in their 5-2, and the Rams have been the polar opposite. The Rams have shocked the NFL world, so to speak, in that they're not supposed to be contending right now. As for the rest of the NFC West, we have the Arizona Cardinals, sans quarterback and starting running back at 3-4, and the 49ers contending for that number one pick at 0-8, keeping up with the Cleveland Browns. Who will be the first team to win? That is the true interesting point for the rest of the season. One can assume that neither team will go 0-16, as it's only happened once in the entire history of the NFL, meaning that two teams going 0-16 in the same year would be almost statistically impossible. As much as I'd love to see it happen, then I would assume that both teams will be able to pick up a win eventually. I'd add that the 49ers are the better team, so I would think that the Browns will wind up with the number one pick. Now, from the West Coast to the East Coast, the Philadelphia Eagles have the best record in the NFL, 7-1, leading the NFC East by 2.5 games over their rival, the Dallas Cowboys, who are 4-3 currently. The Cowboys, who might lose Ezekiel Elliott at some point this season. One could say that he should have just served the suspension at the beginning of the year, so he could be there for the playoff push, but nope, he has not. There's still a 6-game suspension waiting, and no one really knows when he's going to serve it. Legal experts have weighed in. The NFL said he wasn't going to be able to get a stay, and he did. He's going to play this week, according to recent reports. And you wonder why he just didn't take the slap on the wrist. It's got to be a point of principle for him at this point. He must honestly either be innocent or truly believe he's innocent or want to exonerate his character. Because if Tom Brady had to serve his suspension for deflating footballs when there was no concrete evidence that he did it, you bet your bottom dollar you're going to have to serve your suspension for potentially abusing a woman and acting improperly. Third place in the NFC East belongs to the Washington Redskins. With the under-talented wide receiving core they have, they are 3-4. And the Redskins don't really have too much playoff aspirations unless Josh Doctson and Jamison Crowder start turning into superstars. Their defense is decent, their running game is meh, and Jordan Reed is their best offensive weapon, with Terrell Pryor, of course. They're going to have to really think long and hard about extending Kirk Cousins this offseason, because they're already feeling the financial impact of having a franchise quarterback, and they don't really have too much around him. So signing him on for another 5 years at whatever comes out to be, it'll probably be one of the highest, if not the highest, contracts of all time, as is everyone that they do. And finally, in last place in the NFC East are my New York Giants, who are 1-6, having a very good season. No one could have seen this one coming. Odell Beckham goes down with an injury, out for the year. Brandon Marshall goes down with an injury, out for a year. Sterling Shepard goes down for a period of time. You have Olivier Vernon nicked up. Weston Richburg nicked up. Justin Pugh's on and off, switching positions. And buried deep underneath that is that Ereck Flowers has played a decent season. Probably his best season ever. That being said, Eli Manning, saw a statistic this week. When Eli Manning releases the ball in under 2.5 seconds, I believe he is top 10 in the league in passer rating. I could be quoting it wrong. When it takes longer than 2.5 seconds, his passer rating drops more than 30 points. Tells you how much time Eli has behind this mediocre at best, and most of the time atrocious offensive line. It's going to be a long offseason for the New York Giants, just like it's been a long season thus far. And they're really going to have to take a look at Ben McAdoo and say, what do we have here? Is this man capable of leading this team to the promised land? And is he capable of being a good leader of men? You see Janoris Jenkins and DRC getting suspended. There's a little bit of tension in the locker room. That being said, there was tension in the locker room before when Tom Coughlin was here. But there were also leaders in that locker room, like Michael Strahan and such. And Strahan hated Tom Coughlin. By the end, he loved him. Sometimes you have to change as a coach. Is McAdoo capable of changing? I don't know. Is he willing to change is the real question. Moving on from the NFC East, let's take a look at the NFC South. Currently, the surprising New Orleans Saints have a half-game lead over the Carolina Panthers. They sit at 5-2, and the Panthers at 5-3. The defending NFC champions come in at 4-3 in third place, and the underperforming Tampa Bay Buccaneers in last at 2-5. As expected, the NFC South is completely up for grabs. As of right now, in terms of points scored, the Saints have had the best offense in the division. Finally, in the NFC North, we have the Minnesota Vikings in first at 6-2. They're on a 4-game win streak right now. The Green Bay Packers are 4-3, and they are without MVP quarterback Aaron Rodgers for the rest of the season, which means it's going to be a tough road to the postseason. Then we have the Detroit Lions at 3-4, and the Chicago Bears at a respectable 3-5 in a rebuilding season. As we go big picture, as of right now, the Eagles and Vikings are the top two seeds in the NFC. Then the playoff matchups would be the number 3-seeded Saints against the 6-seeded Panthers, which would be a divisional matchup and a rematch. And speaking of divisional matches and rematch, the 4-5-seed matchup would be Seahawks-Rams. That being said, there's still plenty of teams in the hunt in the NFC. The Falcons, Packers, and Cowboys are all just one game behind the Carolina Panthers. And the Panthers are just a half game behind the Rams. Behind that three-piece, you also have the Lions, Redskins, and Cardinals at 3-4. Now, considering some of these teams are being led by backup quarterbacks, such as the Packers and Cardinals, it might be a little harder for them to make the postseason, but we'll see how it works out. Before we get into everyone's favorite part of the show, Nostradonautics Picks of the Week, let's take a look at the mid-season awards, in my opinion. As of right now, I have Carson Wentz in just his second season winning the NFL MVP, as he has led the Eagles to the best record in football. The Offensive Rookie of the Year, which was tough for me because, you know, I'm a big fan of both Leonard Fournette and Deshaun Watson, wound up being a third underdog that no one had heard of at the beginning of the year, Kareem Hunt. And when I say no one, obviously I don't mean no one, but he was not expected to perform as much as those other two. Kareem Hunt was electric to start the season, and he has been phenomenal throughout the season. As of right now, he is leading the league in rushing with 763 yards, and he also has 307 receiving yards, bringing him to a total of 970 yards in just 8 games. Defensive Rookie of the Year goes to another player that's flying under the radar, Bills defensive back Tre'Davious White. White was selected in the first round near the end, and he's been performing like one of the best defensive backs in the league, according to Pro Football Focus. He is ranked number 9 in the NFL at cornerback as a rookie. White's coming into this week with 31 tackles, 13 pass deflections, 1 pick, 1 forced fumble, 2 fumble recoveries, and a fumble return for a touchdown. His performance has certainly played a role in that overperforming Bills defense. My Offensive Player of the Year is Tom Brady, who's leading the league in passing yards right now, and has thrown just 2 interceptions. Now, one could make the argument for Alex Smith. Smith has a higher completion rating, less interceptions by 2, and a higher passer rating. That being said, Smith, in my opinion, has more weapons around him, so I'll give this one to Brady. Defensive Player of the Year, for me, has to be DeMarcus Lawrence. In just 7 games, he's totaled 10.5 sacks, 3 forced fumbles, and he has been a force for the Dallas Cowboys defense. Lawrence has not played as much as they've wanted him to in his first 4 seasons, having missed a total of 16 games in 3 years, and he's already missed 1 this season, but when he has been on the field, he has been pretty good. In his second season, he tallied 8 sacks in a full 16 games, but in his first and third seasons, he tallied just 1 sack in a total of 16 games. So perhaps it's more accurate to call him hit or miss. One thing is certain, the first half of this season, he has been a big hit. My coach of the year right now goes to Sean McVay. I was contemplating Doug Peterson and a couple other coaches, but in the end, I had to give it to McVay because I did not expect this Rams team to perform as well as they have. That being said, at the end of the season, if the Rams missed the postseason and they tanked the second half of the year, obviously I wouldn't give it to McVay. Nonetheless, I would give it to a team that was sneaking into the playoffs. So that means if the Rams miss and the Bills sneak in as a wild card, this could go to Sean McDermott. If the Jaguars sneak in, it could go to Lehman High School alum, Bronx native, Doug Marrone. We'll keep our eyes out, but as of right now, I had to go with McVay. Comeback Player of the Year. At the beginning of the year, I picked J.J. Watt because it was supposed to be a great story. He was fundraising and doing amazing things in the city of Houston, and he comes back from this awful injury, and they thought he might lose his leg. And what happens? He goes down again, and he's out for the year. And everyone holds their collective breath and hopes that this isn't how the rest of his career plays out. That being said, you have to give the award away anyway, and I would give it to Todd Gurley. Gurley enters Week 9, 5th in the league in rushing, with 627 yards. He also has 293 receiving yards. The reason I'd give him Comeback Player of the Year is because last season, in 16 games, he averaged 3.2 yards a carry, and he had just 885 yards. Through 7 games, he already has 627, and he's averaging over a full yard a carry more. Furthermore, in the receiving game, he has played a much bigger role. He's averaging 3 yards per catch more than last season, and is about to eclipse his receiving total in just 8 games. Gurley was a standout star in his rookie season, and everyone thought he would be the next great NFL running back. When he had a second-year slump, it was a little predictable. Most rookies have a second-year slide. That's why the sophomore slump is a term. That being said, how much of that can be blamed on him, or their lackluster offensive line, or the lackluster Jeff Fisher? It's hard to tell. One thing's for certain, Todd Gurley is a big reason the Rams are contenders right now. All right, folks, that is the end of our mid-season recap, mid-season award show, postseason preview of sorts. And now we can get into the fun part of the show, the pick 'em portion. And we're coming off a hot week, blazing hot, perhaps our best week of the season. In week 8, we were 11-2. Let's not talk about that Thursday night game. We got that one wrong. Whatever, we'll move past that one. Anyway, let's waste no time and get straight into the picks. Nostradonotic is ready, and he is ready to talk about the first game of the week, the Buccaneers and the Saints in New Orleans. This should be a fun divisional matchup, and you know I've been high on the Buccaneers personnel-wise all season. That being said, I have to pick the Saints in this game. The Buccaneers have disappointed me one too many times, and they're going to need to prove to me that they can win games like this. Games that they're talented enough to win, but we just know they're not going to win. Give me the Saints at home to hold on to that division lead. Our next game, we have the Atlanta Falcons, the defending NFC champs, taking on the Carolina Panthers in Carolina. Now, the Falcons may be coming off a victory, but it wasn't too impressive. Although the same could be said about the entire season of these Carolina Panthers. When you think they're going to win, they usually let you down. This feels like a game the Panthers should win, but they just dealt their best wide receiver to the Buffalo Bills, and for that reason, I'm going to have to take the Falcons to go into Carolina and win this one. Next, in an interdivisional matchup in New Jersey, we have the LA Rams against the New York Giants. As much as I would love to pick the Giants to win this one in an upset, as I did when the Giants played the Seahawks, as I wanted to do when the Giants played the Broncos, and did at the beginning of the season, I'm going to have to take the Rams in this one. The Rams come in as one of the league's best offenses, and the New York Giants come in as the New York Giants. As of right now, they're on tap for a top five pick, and that's a successful season at this point. Give me the Rams, and give me the Rams by 10+. On the AFC side of the docket, at 1 p.m., we have the Baltimore Ravens heading into Tennessee to take on Marcus Mariota and the Tennessee Titans. This Ravens team, as I've touched on before, is befuddling to say the least. They are mediocre in every sense of the word. They are good enough to go 8-8, and they likely will. Perhaps 9-7, perhaps 7-9. That being said, I think this Tennessee team is trying to show that they are the team to beat in the AFC South. I said the same thing about Houston last week. Obviously, they went out and lost, but they played a phenomenal game. And if Deshaun Watson was healthy, I would pick the Texans to win that division. But Watson went down, so now I think the Titans are the clear frontrunner in that division, and I think they assert that by beating the Ravens this week. Next, we have the Cincinnati Bengals heading to Florida to take on the Jacksonville Jaguars. This is an odd game, and I'll tell you why. The Bengals are not very good. I don't think many people would challenge that. The Jaguars are pretty good. I think some might challenge that. That being said, this feels like a game that Marvin Lewis and the Bengals could go in and steal, because usually in these games, they're the favorite. I don't believe they're favored in this game, nor should they be. But talent-wise, they could walk in and make a game out of this. That being said, I'm going to take the chalk and pick the Jaguars to win at home and stay in it in the AFC South. But I could easily see the Bengals winning this one in a game that could come down to who has the ball last. In this sounded like a great matchup a few weeks ago news, we have the Denver Broncos, led by Brock Osweiler, the Denver Broncos heading into Philly to take on the NFL-leading Philadelphia Eagles. 60-second picks, anyone? I'll take Philly, because Philly is not starting Brock Osweiler. That is all. Our final 1 p.m. game is a divisional matchup between two teams missing their franchise quarterbacks. The Indianapolis Colts head to Houston to take on the Houston Texans, and I'm going to take Houston because they have a better defense and more offensive weapons. That being said, this game is a complete crapshoot. Who knows how it's going to play out? Tom Savage quarterbacking one team, Jacoby Brissett quarterbacking the other. By the way, we didn't mention it in the standout seven. It is a standout point, but obviously I was trying to save some time. Andrew Luck is confirmed to be done for the year, and it's probably for the best. This team isn't going anywhere. Why throw him out there and get him hurt again? Let him have the full year to recover. Get a high draft pick. Make a good pick. Maybe sign some free agent offensive linemen and some other players. Have him come back and try and sneak in with an easier schedule next year. Anyway, that being said, I'm not sure if I slid my pick in there. I'm going to take the Texans in this one. Just to confirm what I'm talking about. I'm going to take the Texans in our final 1 p.m. game of Week 9. At 4:05, we have a rematch of an infamous playoff game. The Redskins head to Seattle to take on the Seahawks. If you remember the playoff game I'm talking about the game where Robert Griffin III changed his career forever. his ACL tore when he was dropping back on that chopped up field in Washington, D.C. Obviously, this game is going to be in Seattle, so I don't have to worry about that. But Redskin fans probably remember that game not too fondly. That being said, they likely won't remember this game too fondly either. As I've been low on the Seahawks for a while, but they're still better than the Redskins. Give me the Seahawks to win this one at home. Not to mention, they have momentum coming off a victory over that young Houston Texans squad. Our only other 405 matchup is a battle for ratings as much as it is a battle on the field. Cardinals 49ers. Cardinals without starting quarterback Carson Palmer, and the 49ers without a starting quarterback on their roster. Now, it's unclear, and this is another point that was left out of the standout seven. Wow, I'm sorry, guys. I abbreviated and I missed some big ones. The 49ers traded for Patriots backup Jimmy Garoppolo, who former 49ers coach Jim Harbaugh actually seemed like he wanted to draft, but didn't because he had a quarterback at the time, Colin Kaepernick. Now Harbaugh and Kaepernick are both out of the league. So how's that for a flashback? Anyway, it's unclear if Jimmy G is going to play in this game. Some reports say it's unclear if Jimmy G is going to play all season, which would be odd, in my opinion. That being said, I'll take the Cardinals to win this one because they're still the more talented team, even without a starting quarterback and running back, which says something. But John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan are doing a good job of losing, which is what they set out to do. So I think they keep up doing a good job, and the 49ers lose this one. Next, as we head into Game of the Week territory, the Kansas City Chiefs head into Dallas to take on the Dallas Cowboys and Ezekiel Elliott. As we mentioned, he's still there. I very much want to pick the Cowboys to win this game. Dallas is playing at home. Dallas is playing with their star running back who might not be around for the rest of the season. And we've seen in the past, when their star running back isn't going to be around, they use them, and they use them a lot, and they use them well. Look at DeMarco Murray. They used him up, spit him out, and Philly paid him and traded him promptly. Anyway, that being said, this Kansas City Chiefs team is great. They have a legitimate shot to win the AFC this year. And I haven't felt this way about a Chiefs team probably ever. Even in the past few years, I assume that Alex Smith would hold them back. And when we come playoff time, I might wind up leaning back on that assumption. And in the past, it's been right. So arguably, it's a good one. That being said, in this game, I feel like it might devolve into a shootout. And that's one of the reasons I'm going to take the Cowboys. My brain is telling me Kansas City. And don't get it misconstrued. My heart never tells me Dallas. But another part of me is telling me to pick the Dallas Cowboys at home to win this big game over the Chiefs. Because this Cowboys team is trying to show that they can still compete for this division. If they lose this week, and Philly wins, which Philly likely will, they play Denver, then Dallas would fall 3.5 games back with 8 games to go. That's hard to make up. That's start playing for the wild card position right there. I think Dallas wins this one and keeps their hopes for the division alive. The Sunday night game, in games that sounded great a very, very, very long time ago news, the Oakland Raiders head into Miami to take on the Dolphins. I'll give you a 60-second pick, though I feel like this game will be disappointing anyway. I'm going to take the Raiders because the Raiders have an actual starting quarterback in Derek Carr. I'm unclear what the Dolphins are doing out there. They just traded Jay Ajayi. The report said they were trying to trade Jarvis Landry. I think the head coach is probably going to be on his way out within a year or two if this doesn't turn around. I think Tannehill might be on his way out soon enough. Give me the Raiders. I don't know what's going on in Miami. That's just dysfunction. Then on Monday night, we have a divisional matchup, Lions at Packers. In a game that the Detroit Lions should win and need to win, which means I'm going to take Brett Hundley and the Packers to pull off the upset. They've had 2 weeks to prep for this game. We talked about this. They're coming off a bye, and they have Detroit at home. If you go back 2 episodes, I talked about how I'd be tempted to pick Green Bay to win this one. And I'm going to. I think Hundley is going to have a decent game, bordering on a big game. I'm torn on whether to call Detroit mildly disappointing or mildly overrated. I think their defense is mildly overrated. I think their offense can be and often is electric. Matthew Stafford is one of the best clutch quarterbacks in the NFL. Golden Tate has been a great signing for them. Marvin Jones, another great signing. Amir Abdullah has been pretty good in the backfield. Their offensive line is all right. I'm making a hand gesture you can't see, but they're You know, hit or miss, hit more than miss, in my opinion. That being said, I think this Green Bay team finds a way to pull it out at home on Monday night. Finally, as is customary, we will pick next week's Thursday night football game. We have the Seahawks heading into Arizona to take on the Cardinals. You want another 60-second pick? Don't worry, I won't let you down. Seattle at Arizona in Arizona on Thursday. Arizona has a backup quarterback going and an older running back, albeit he is Adrian Peterson, but that doesn't mean he doesn't age. Give me Seattle in that one in what might be a boring game. I could see it being very exciting, but with a backup quarterback going against the Seattle defense, I'd say it's going to be closer to boring than exciting. Give me Seattle. Alrighty then, folks, that is going to bring us to the end of Episode 10 of the Necessary Roughness Podcast. I hope you enjoyed. Thank you for joining us. Join us next week, same time, Saturday afternoon, for another episode. And enjoy your weekend of NFL football and have a great week. I'm Nicholas Donatic, signing off.